You're listening to Rosie on the House.
It is the fourth Saturday of the month. That means we're with Farmer Greg of the Urban Farm.
Woo! Sorry about that. I had to throw it in.
No, I paused myself because the title. I wanted to make sure. Urban Farm.
Yep, Farmer Greg from the Urban Farm. There you go. And today we're here with Kari Spencer from the Micro Farm Project, which I'm really excited about that.
Hello, hello.
If you'd like to join the conversation or want to talk about your urban farm or have questions, it's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE4U. You can send text questions to info@rosieonthehouse.com or text during the broadcast only is 411-923, and we'll do our best to get you the information you're looking for your own urban farm. The point of this segment with Farmer Greg is to encourage everyone to
preserve that bounty.
Preserve the bounty.
You know, I've learned over the past couple of decades that this whole notion of lack, us not having enough, only exists in one place. It exists between our ears. Because when I look at the bounty that I pull off of the trees and the gardens at the urban farm, it's mind-blowing. We're just finishing up the apricot harvest, and I probably had 800 apricots.
And for everyone, if you've never heard this broadcast, you've never heard Farmer Greg describe the urban farm, you hear farm, and like you said, between our head, my mind goes to
acres
and what, you know, my relatives' farm is thousands of flooded acres of rice in southwest Louisiana,
right?
Miles and miles of levees and water canals and pumps and hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars of equipment and combine. And the urban farm is
12,000 square feet.
12,000 square feet.
80 feet wide by 160 feet deep.
And produced 800 apricots. And that's just
one tree. Actually, that was two trees. The peaches are coming. I'm probably going to have 200, 300, 400 peaches and maybe 1,000 apples. The apples will be here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So the amount of bounty that is possible is sometimes mind-blowing.
And the point of today's broadcast specifically is to preserve that bounty.
Yeah, what do you do with all of it? And that's I always
you can't eat 800 apricots and you know, before they go bad
in without preserving them. In a 2 week period. Yeah. So I always like getting Kari in on this conversation because she's such a master at prepping for it. Because I'll tell you what, you know, let's just call it 800 apricots, 500 peaches and 1,000 apples in a 4 week period. You have to plan for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're scrambling when you're picking all these things, scrambling to figure out what to do with them, you might be in trouble.
That's too late.
Right. Yeah, so we want to think about in advance what we're going to do with the harvest so that we can prepare our recipes, our equipment, all those kinds of things. That way you can save money on buying your equipment. Because if you're looking for a canner at the last second, you're going to pay full price. But if you're looking for a canner in advance, you might be able to find one on, you know, Craigslist or OfferUp or somewhere. Maybe borrow one from somebody.
Yeah.
So we want to think about what we're going to do with this harvest before it gets here.
And how do you like to can? Do you water bathe or do you pressure cook?
I do both, but water bath canning is probably the one that I do the most because tomatoes are the number one thing that I end up canning. And you can water bath can tomatoes. Anything that is high in acid, you can water bath can. Anything that is low in acid, like if you had a corn harvest or green beans, something like that, you would need to have a pressure canner.
And what's the difference between the two?
Well, a water bath canner is just preparing your canned goods using hot water, boiling it.
And that's a timed affair, right? You have to boil for a certain amount of time.
Sure.
Depending on how many cans and...
Yeah, absolutely. And there are lots of recipes and guidelines that we're going to share with you how to find those so that you know exactly how long to boil whatever it is that you're making. A pressure canner uses high pressure.
And in both cases, you still want to wash the cans. I mean, whether they were clean and nothing was in them from last year, we always put a high hot cycle in the dishwasher, let them get steamed, clean the lids, the rings, the mason jars,
yes,
all of it.
Yeah, so I just want to distinguish here. We keep saying canning. It's actually not canning. It's jarring.
That's right.
Because we're putting things in jars for the most part.
That's right, yeah, putting things in glass jars. And yes, sterilization is very important. We don't want to have germs in our canned goods. Also, equally important is to select produce that is not molding or damaged and might be harboring bacteria as well. And if you have sterile jars, you follow the instructions for canning, and you start with good produce, then you can have wonderful, safe food and have it on the shelf all year long.
Which is great for peaches, because you can never have enough canned peaches, in my opinion.
That's the truth, yeah.
No kidding.
Is it better to use, to when you're doing peaches, for instance, should they be just barely ripe or very ripe? How do you have a preference of when that gets done?
I don't really. I actually prefer riper ones because they're sweeter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But some people like to pick them a little early to can because they don't get as mushy in the canning process. However, the riper the peach is, I find it's easier to get the skin off. Yeah.
Yeah, they're a whole lot easier the riper they are to get them off the pit. And
it's an impossible job to do clean. You just... You know, you're going to be sticky the whole time.
Yeah.
Just roll with it.
Yeah. So, and we need to distinguish that. You said to do cling.
Clean.
Oh, clean.
While you're skinning the peaches
and cutting them up.
And
well, but, and what I heard was cling peaches. So you want to speak to that?
Yeah. Well, some peaches come off the stone much easier than others. Cling peaches, those are the ones that are harder or easier, Greg? I don't remember.
Cling peaches, the pit clings to
right.
the peach.
So they're
the
harder.
Peach.
They're
a lot harder.
Mm-hmm.
So having a cling-free peach, which most of our peaches are semi-cling or cling-free that we sell through our program, it makes it really easy to get the pit out of them.
And in addition to peaches that are coming up, what else is ready to be canned right now?
Well, apricots. And as Greg mentioned, apples are just about to come in, and I like to make apple pie filling and can that. And then if I have somebody over, I can just make a pie really, really fast. Just pour the filling that I pre-made into a crust and stick it in the oven, heat it up.
And the Anna apples that grow very well in the desert are great for pie filling. By themselves, they're tart. And so they make a very good baking apple.
Sure. The Anna apples that we grow here and the Dorset Gold, is that what it is?
Dorset Golden, yep.
Those are kind of a green apple that gets a little bit of a red blush on them, and they are perfect for making pie filling.
Yeah, and they start tart at the beginning of the season. So now is the beginning of the apple season for Phoenix, so the apples are tarter. The longer they stay on the tree, the sweeter they get. So 3 weeks from now, we'll actually be eating sweet apples, and we can can them. So we make applesauce. I regularly make applesauce every year or two, and apple chips. And we're going to talk about dehydrating in a little while. But
is everything a little late this year? Roma, you went to the peach harvest, and they weren't quite ready. Are you finding in your little farms it's the same thing? Everything's a little later with this cool weather.
Yeah, because it was just cool.
Yeah, we took the family out to Schnepp Farms, and we were going to do peaches, and we've got some friends in Santan Valley, and we went over the olive mill, and we went over to the pork shop, and we just loaded up on goodies from those areas, and that we didn't get. I think we ended up with a bag full of peaches. None of them were ripe, but it was just to go 2 hours and not come home without a peach.
And
they're not ripe. Go pick a couple, whatever.
There you go.
And thinning them is a critical part, and my horses love this time of year.
Yep.
Every day I'll get a bucket, I'll go out there and I'll pick off an apple till the bucket's full, and to this day I haven't come back to a spot. You know, an apple cluster, it'll have 4, 5, 6 apples on the end of
the
stem.
Like that. Maybe I should take a picture.
Just
and
like
that.
Yeah.
And
every day I'll just take another one off that cluster and fill the bucket, and then as I'm feeding hay, drop a couple apples in. And our youngest horse, Fancy, she's about five. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're always careful around the horse, but you're extra careful around Fancy. Very high-strung mare, very young, still in a lot learning phase, and isn't always that comfortable around you. Well, after a week of hand-feeding apples, when I'm in the stall cleaning, she, like, comes up behind me and puts her head over my shoulder and kind of hits the side of my head with her nose, like,
where's my apple?
I have more of those apples.
Yeah, where's my apple, exactly.
Apples will tame a wild beast. That's the point of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So this whole notion of canning, basically what you're doing, it's two major steps. You get a recipe and you prepare something, you know, whether it's applesauce or jam or tomatoes, and that's the process in itself. And then the jarring part is where you actually stick it in jars, cook the jars to, you know, eliminate any bad microbes. And then when the jars cool off, they're actually sealed. Mm-hmm. And they'll store on the shelf for
years, if they last that long, though, because you'll want to open up and eat them. One of my favorite things to do is to get a vintage canning book, like canning and jarring.
Mm-hmm.
Canning and freezing is a great vintage book published in 1975. Recipes that you'll never find anything like it on the shelf in your grocery store. But you can make some amazing things, impress your friends, and make your family very happy.
Give an example, Kari.
Well, I have a recipe for a chili sauce that I got out of that book. It's my favorite recipe of all time. And so I make chili sauce that we use for various things. I just pull it out of the freezer. We can use it for chicken. We can use it for beef, pork, whatever. And it is so delicious. It's like nothing that you would ever get from your market. And but it was a recipe from 1975. And since that time, in 1985, the guidelines for canning changed. So I want to just alert everybody that if they are going to do some canning in order to keep it safe, make sure that you are either selecting recipes that were created after 1985 or that you are looking at those guidelines and updating your vintage recipes. And you can find all that information at the National Center for Home Food Preservation. And that is at nchfp.uga.edu.